Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. We are covering a cult classic legend. One of the all-time great roles by an actor, John Voight, slays in Anaconda. Hang out with us while we break it down for you guys. We'll see you in just 1 second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Oh, it's smooth.
Yeah.
We felt like we were doing Dre a little too much, so we had to move through other members of NWA. Next, we're going to do a little Eazy-E.
Yeah.
You know,
just work our way through the entire catalog of NWA.
The entire catalog of NWA. John Boyd loves this music.
Wow. What an interesting week this is.
Yes, it is, guys. Welcome to the show. This is Action Movie Anatomy. If you guys are new to the show, first time, we talk action movies on this show. And this is the Popcorn Talk Network you are watching or listening to, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie-related. We discuss what we believe are the greatest action movies of our time. And for years, Andrew and I, my co-host Andrew Guy right here.
Hey, that's me. Nice to meet you.
I'm Ben Bateman. You guys can find us on Twitter, Ben Bateman Media.
Yeah, you guys can find me at Andrew Guy, and you can find the podcast at AMA Podcast. Please follow along, and I got the live chat going.
For 7 minutes.
For a little bit, until my phone dies.
So, we have been quoting Anaconda, specifically two lines from Anaconda, for like
years.
Several years.
Yes.
Like Andrew and I have been talking movies together for a long time, and this was like one of the movies that we bonded over. And neither of us had taken the time to sit down and watch the movie Anaconda.
Like, legitimately sit down, beginning to end, no distractions, not on cable, not at work, not while you're doing something else. Sit down and watch this movie.
Now, to clarify, we had both seen the movie.
A lot.
We just hadn't watched it together. I think I used to watch this movie, like, kind of drunk with my roommate, Jeff, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, like, this was not a movie that I would, like, flip on for fun. So we decided, just like old times, we'd order a deep dish pizza, drink
yes.
a bunch of whiskey, and
yep.
Turn on Anaconda. We even actually bought, like, Easter candy, the like
Twix
half eggs.
Eggs, yeah.
And ice cream. And then we made sandwiches and, like, sliced them, and we were both very ill the next day.
You did not feel well, and when I was leaving, Ben was like, you should take the whiskey. And I was like, I'm going to leave it.
I was like, take the whiskey.
Take the whiskey. I was like, nah, I'm good.
And then he's like, okay, I'll take the whiskey. I was like, all right, I'm going to bed.
And then fast forward to the next day, Ben texts me, goes, did you leave the whiskey and take the ice cream?
You bet your ass I did.
Priorities, Bateman.
Real thing, guys.
It's a real,
so,
real life.
So, yes, we watched Anaconda. And I have to say, we had a lot of thoughts about this movie. It's in, like, several reference lists and books as, like, the greatest or, like, one of the greatest good-bad movies ever. Like,
yeah.
So this movie has a cult following. People
for sure
love this movie.
I think it only has a cult following.
Yeah. It's a weird movie in the sense that, like, it became like, one of the definitive sort of 90s examples of that good-bad genre, which as digital media like evolved and this movie took on that cult status in the next 5 to 10 years
mm-hmm.
and cable and everything like that, that's when movies like this really took on lives of their own.
Yeah.
Because memes became a thing.
Memes became a thing and things getting replayed on cable over and over
yeah.
and over for literal decades.
I mean, yeah, online content lists, like top 10 this, top 10 that, BuzzFeed lists. Like, this is one of those movies that everybody remembers because of cable.
Yeah.
So it's just... It's like if you say to someone, like, name three John Voight movies, I feel like most of the time this would be the first movie they'd name.
I think so, too. And it's funny because you and I had a conversation, like, yesterday. Ever since Ben and I were on the Schmodown, which I just saw that someone has been obsessed with our show since we did the Schmodown.
Thank
so
you.
Thank you.
Thank
we're going to be back on it very, very soon.
Yeah.
Got
a match coming up.
We do. But we were talking about how we quiz each other. We just text each other all day quizzing each other
yeah.
Movie trivia. And I sent him one about... Hades and Hercules. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I was like, it might be a really easy question, but that's kind of the only role that people our age know James Woods for is Hades.
Like, yeah. I mean, like I said to you, I was like, I think Casino comes
yeah.
to mind because it's 95. It's a couple mm-hmm. years earlier, and I think like a lot of the people in our generation watched that because it's...
But when you think Casino, it's not like people are like, oh, yeah, James Woods.
Yeah, you're like,
you
oh,
know?
If you've seen Casino, you're like, I remember his character. If you
yes.
haven't seen Casino, you're like... I think that's De Niro and Pesci in that movie, and Sharon Stone.
Yeah, and James Woods had a long career. And the same thing with John Voight is John Voight is an Academy Award winner. He's been around for 50 years now.
I mean, Midnight Cowboy won Best Picture in, like, 1967.
Yeah, and This is the movie that most people our age know him for.
Yeah, Anaconda.
Which is crazy.
Anaconda.
Anacondas.
So, yes, guys, we decided we would cover Anaconda at the suggestion of a fan, and it sounded like a great idea. We were all in.
We were so stoked.
We were stoked. And here we are. We have to spend an hour actually intellectually discussing the movie Anaconda. So, there's a lot to be said about this film.
There is.
And before we get into it, guys, we will introduce the rules of the show, and then we're going to cue the trailer.
Yes, we will.
The rules of the show is, one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Okay, this is a problem, because...
there's, like, no hero.
He's both hero, villain, and legend. John Voight's all the characters. None of the main characters are... The fact that Eric Stoltz is supposed to be like...
like, that he's even in the movie is ridiculous.
They were like, it's 1997, we need a straight white male leading the cast. Like, we can knock him out after 20 minutes, but we need to open the movie with him leading the... like, that's the only way this movie gets made. It's like, yeah. Are you kidding?
Like, we had to have Eric Stoltz to set it off.
Yeah, and then so it's like, I guess it's Jennifer Lopez is the hero, but, like, they don't really make her super capable. They make her...
no. She just kind of survives.
She's kind of a damsel in distress for some of the movie, and she kind of, like, owns it at the end, but it's really just that the snake actually owns it, and she survives.
Yeah, it's really tough, because this movie doesn't really follow a normal movie formula.
No.
There's, like, no hero. There's John Voight. Like you said, he is the hero and the villain.
And a legend.
And a legend. Greatest accent ever. Someone said something about overacting. Guys need to calm down.
I am an actor.
I am an actor, and I know... all right, so let's get into the rules here.
Yeah, rule number two. The hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. I mean, again, this suggests that John Voight's the hero and the snake is the villain because he's 100% the smartest guy in the room.
And he is the only reason they stay alive for as long as they do.
And the snake is definitely the villain.
And it's definitely the smartest
thing in the room. So there you go. That rule fits, but eliminates the rest of the cast. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure.
Technically, John Voight could be a mercenary.
Who's hired him, though?
They didn't hire him.
No, he just showed up.
He just showed up, right? He just lives out there.
He's just hanging out in the jungle.
My ball ran out of guys.
Waiting for a boat to jump on.
It's like pretty close to Scarface, but not quite, you know?
I tried so hard to find any interviews of John Voight talking about this role. I spent like hours reading.
I refuse.
I didn't find anything. I was like, please give me a clip of him talking about this movie. Please tell me there was a red carpet, something that I could find. I couldn't find anything.
And he's like, and you finally find one. He's like, this is the great lost role in my career. This is the one.
The day, I've interviewed John Voight once before, but only for like 2 minutes at like the Creative Arts Emmys or something. Oh, and he was super nice, but like I didn't really get to talk to him. I was working for a bigger outlet where I didn't get to write my own question. And I can't remember what we asked him about. I just don't remember.
Right.
But if I ever get to talk to him, I'm going to, like, this is the only thing I want
to
talk about.
This.
I mean, it's funny, right? Deliverance, Midnight Cowboy, Heat. Like, he's in these movies that are, like,
excellent, excellent films.
He won an Oscar for Coming Home. But it's Anaconda. That's no question the movie
I want to talk to him about.
Yeah. And so rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. There's definitely an explosion in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't have a 90s movie without an explosion.
You really couldn't. And we have a great little 90s question that Josh Ryan presented. But let's get into the trailer here.
Yeah,
let's get to that.
Gear,
great 90s trailer.
Pictures all on board. I pray you didn't forget your bug spray.
They have come to the world's most isolated jungle.
Your cog.
To explore the unknown Amazon.
You ready?
I think so.
And conduct scientific research to prove the
existence
of a long-lost tribe.
Shishama worship giant snakes. Anacondas.
Anacondas. Protectors.
Gods, protectors.
What is this?
Anaconda skin.
He's
it's
so good!
This
snake's out there
this
big!
This skin is 3 or 4 years old. Whatever shed it has grown since then.
Snakes don't eat people.
Oh, they don't?
That's it, man. I'm getting the hell back to L.A.
It's always good to be prepared.
Now, they are the ones being watched.
He's just amazing.
Ones being followed.
Nobody move.
The ones being hunted.
There's something down there.
The intro to Fist Pump needs to be...
No, I really mean it.
I really mean it, too.
Conduct scientific research. But not by anything human.
That's where the smoke!
If we help him, then he will help us get out of here alive.
Get out of the face!
You're gonna get us all killed!
Anaconda.
That was sweet. The eyes turned to the A's. That was amazing.
You can't scream.
That's a good tagline.
Yeah.
You can't breathe, you can't scream.
I remember going to a sleepover in fourth grade at like one of my buddy's houses. Like, it's a weird memory. Like, his parents had gotten divorced, and like there wasn't a lot of divorce yet.
Really sad.
When we were like nine, there wasn't a lot of divorce yet. And like, I remember, like, I was used to always growing up going to his parents' house, but this was like his mom's new place, and we all were there. And they rented Anaconda. It was late '97 or something, '98. And I was like, I hadn't seen it, and it was like, I was like, oh, we get to watch Anaconda. And it was like an R-rated. Is it R-rated?
I think it's PG-13.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, it is PG-13 because they dubbed over a bunch of the F words to make them friggin'.
Right. Friggin'.
Yeah. So it was scary though. I remember. And that shot. You know, the shot of Voight on the ladder and the snake. Still looks good.
Yeah, and so does
the waterfall.
Like, the waterfall from away. It still looks cool. Yeah, I mean, when we were younger, this movie was terrifying.
Yeah, it was actually quite scary.
And our audience here is talking about how we're... Look, guys, we can do this intellectually for an hour. We can definitely do this. So, moving forward, we're going to get it right into our bold thesis statement, which I think is going to be really interesting for a movie like this.
Yeah, and if you're a new listener, new viewer to the show, thesis statement, it's just like, you want to have a statement that you can defend all throughout the movie. Something really big, either like... factual, like this is the way this movie is, or it's the greatest this, the only this, the first this, something. It should never be like, this is one of my three favorite roles of the 90s. It should be, this is one of the three greatest roles of the 90s, if you were going to do that, which it's not. it's the single greatest role of the 90s. No, my thesis statement I'm going to jump in with is this. Anaconda as a movie has this incredible 90s ensemble cast. However, this movie could have been made with two characters and the snake. And it would have been the same movie. You don't need none of the extra characters. The only character you need is somebody playing Jennifer Lopez's role, Voight, doing everything he's doing.
And the snake.
Because literally, none of the movie's believable. None of the characters add anything to the plot. It's just to make it over 90 minutes. So, like, she would go out on a boat, like, working for National Geographic by herself to do this thing and meet this civilization, and she'd be like, I didn't have the money for a producer, or my guy got sick last minute, and I have to do it myself. And the movie would start, and it would be, like, a lot of her on the boat for, like, 10, 12 minutes.
Right.
And then Voight would show up, because he'd have his stranded boat, and he would board her boat.
Yeah,
That's the whole movie.
That's
And then it's the snake, and it's like a subversive, like, cat and mouse between the two of them.
Yeah, and they could maybe meet people along the way so that people could get killed by the snake.
Yeah.
But it's, like, really the only reason the cast is there, is, or the crew is there, just to get killed.
Yeah, 100%.
Lady Bird.
But the thing is, even them getting killed, which is, like, fine.
It doesn't even add much tension or...
John Voight, he's a tour de force in this movie.
He's a tour de force.
And, like, we joke a lot about this, but this is something I always say. And it's a lesson Kevin Undergaro, who is the owner and started Popcorn Talk and everything, he always says this. Like, when you go watch a movie and you say, well, this was wrong with it, and this was wrong with it, and this was wrong with it, and X, Y, or Z, he's like, it made this much money and this many people saw it.
Yeah.
So why don't you start thinking about what they did right, not what they did wrong?
Yep, Kevin always says that.
And it's a smart thing to say, because if you really think about it, while Anaconda is a bad movie, like, I think we can, with a straight face,
it's not a good
say,
movie. It's not a good movie.
John Voight is so sweet and so memorable in this movie, and the campy stuff they write into this movie is so memorable. This made a ton of money and became a cult classic that gets replayed, and cable networks pay to play on their stations.
Absolutely.
For years to come.
Eric Stoltz is still getting his residuals.
So, John Voight, I say he's a tour de force and I'm laughing, but, like, no one's going to be like, hey, let's go watch Coming Home on cable. They're going to say, let's watch Anaconda on cable.
Yeah, and the thing is that it is a tour de force. Like, I know it's ridiculous, and I know a lot of people say that he's overacting, but... without John Voight in this movie, it's unwatchable.
Unwatchable.
It is unbearable. And like, he makes everything fantastic. So I think what my thesis statement is I think the 90s is the most poorly aging genre of film.
Oh, really?
I really do.
Worse than the 80s.
I think that the 80s and 70s and 60s are so far detached.
Yeah.
That, like, when you watch an 80s movie, it feels like a time capsule. And you go back, you watch Breakfast Club or, I mean, Breakfast at Tiffany, any of those movies.
We watched Monster Squad for the JMP episode. It was like, this is so 80s.
It's so weird. And it's so 80s. But, like, there's still something kind of fun about it. Whereas, like, the 90s, unless you grew up in the 90s, these movies aren't really, you can't really appreciate them.
And it's funny, like, you know, I've been hanging out with this guy, graphic designer at one of the offices I work at, and he plays a lot of 90s music. He just loves 90s music. He grew up in the 90s. And he said, like, yeah, bro, 90s. And I was like, that's like 8-9 years ago. People used to talk about the 80s like that, you know, and they used to talk about 80s. And I realized that the 90s is now that way for people. But I don't think it's the same thing, because I would agree, like, the 80s has all these, like, really distinctive, very stylized things going on.
Yeah, it's like they've made specific choices in the 80s.
Or something. And the 90s almost just feel like a slightly, like, a little bit behind the times version of what the 2000s and the modern day is.
I mean, yeah, it's like, I felt like the 90s was just like an adjustment phase for a decade for us to kind of figure out what we wanted.
I think the 2000s, honestly, is going to feel, because this is the thing, like, the big transition that happens, right, is the late 90s when the internet happens.
Yeah.
That's, like, really what changes everything. Technology and the way technology is presented in films is, like, one of the big barriers for the way movies age,
mm-hmm.
Both in the special effects, but also just in the context of the movies, the way plots are constructed.
And that might have been what it was, because in the 90s, the plots were so fantastical.
Yeah.
That by the time that the internet had come out and, like, 2000 rolled around, it's like, everything in the 90s was negated.
It was, like, aged really fast,
exactly, because of the internet. And so I think because of that, and that's so, I didn't even think about the internet being such a huge effect on it. Like, ever since the 2000 hit, it's like we have been rapidly evolving every year with film to keep up with the times.
I'll bet you movies from, like, this is 97, and in 2017, 20 years later,
mm-hmm.
this feels like it's aged in, like, a really, like, pretty poor, like, you know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't feel current. And I would bet you movies that came out in 2007,
mm-hmm.
in 2027, are not going to feel that way.
I don't think so either. And I do think that the 2000s might be the best decade of movies for me.
Yeah.
And, like, the movies that happened between, like, 99 and 2009.
There's some really good movies.
There's insane stuff in there.
Yeah.
So I think that's my thesis. And I want to really quickly just see if I can... People saying that it was painful to watch. They felt the same way with Deep Blue Sea. This movie was terrifying for them as a kid, but now it's just not. Yeah. Yeah, it's tough, guys. I mean, it's tough when you look at something and you adore it so much.
Yeah.
And I think Independence Day was the big one for us.
Yeah.
When we look back at it, and we were so excited to do it on the show. And then when we covered it, it was just such a bummer. It was such a letdown.
That's the worst one. It was early on in the show. I think if we had done Independence Day now, I think if we hadn't done it then and we had done everything in between and we did Independence Day today, I don't think we would have been anywhere near as let down.
No.
It was the first one that we did that was a classic for us that we felt like kind of kicked in the nuts by.
Yeah, it was like we were very excited to do it. We knew it was going to be a home run, and it was not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I find it funny. So if anybody is watching or listening that has, like, I'll explain what's going on right now. I'm doing a couple different media endeavors. You guys know that I do this Masters of Modern podcast for Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked about that on here, and I've talked about this show on there, and there's some crossover. And Twitter has been, because I started the show on Anchor that I'll talk about a little later, like, I got tweeted this morning by a guy that listens to the Magic show, who I'm going to go and play in a tournament with in Texas this weekend. And he was, like, about to watch Anaconda for the first time. Wish me luck. And I saw that, and I'm like, you know, Ryan, if you're listening to this episode or you're watching, I promise you that Anaconda is not the caliber of movie that I would expect you to watch for this show. Like, this is like a very unique movie.
Yeah.
I think it's not the worst movie we've ever done on the show, because it has much more camp value than Independence Day Resurgence has. But, like, in terms of just, like, unwatchably bad movie if you're not in on the joke.
Like, if we and like, being a real film critic.
Or if you're watching it by yourself.
Yeah.
If you're not watching it with someone.
Yeah, I that's, like, what I said immediately afterwards. Like, if we watched this alone, this episode would have been not a good. It would have not been good.
Yes.
You know?
But we digress.
Yeah.
Those are the thesis statements. Let's move on to the next part of the show. Let's move on to fist bump moments.
Yes.
So fist bump moments, that part of the movie, guys, you're watching, and something happens, and you're like, oh my God, this is so awesome. Is anybody else seeing this right now? This is fucking sweet. I get to watch the rest of this movie. I'm so stoked. You want to call your buddy and tell him to flip on the movie. So John Voight
is the fist pump.
Yeah.
Every line, every scene, everything he does.
Yeah.
The sweat stain.
I wrote the sweat stain as my fist pump.
Specifically?
His sweat stain is, like, pretty remarkable.
Bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's always sweaty.
For some reason, I just like that he calls her a ladybird.
Yeah.
It's, like, really creepy and weird. And then he straight up just murders her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just him. Just anytime he does anything, I was, like, always cheering.
Yeah, Voight, yeah. He's the hero, he's the villain, and he's
and
the legend.
He's the legend.
He could have played the snake, honestly.
He could have done the voice of the snake. It would have been great.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, I mean, that's an easy one. Look, I'm going to be honest with you guys. There's three John Voight lines that are sweet. There's his sweat stain, and every time he's on screen, that's going to be the answer to basically all the questions we do about this episode.
For sure. Yeah. And if you guys have your specific fist pump moments, please... Yeah. Please put them in the chat, because we'd love to read them out. I mean, if I had to pick another one, it would probably be It might be when Voight gets puked back up and winks.
And he winks.
You're like, of course he winks.
For a second there, I was like, is he still alive? Does he come back? I kind of feel like he comes back.
Yeah.
And for a while there, in my mind, I was like, oh, yeah, and he slices out of the snake's stomach. But I was like, no, that's Men in Black.
That's Men in Black. That's not this movie.
Yeah.
I wish he did. This would have been incredible. What an ending if John Voight had sliced out of the snake's stomach.
Ah. Yeah.
Still wearing the shirt. Sweat stain even bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
Lady Bird.
Lady
Bird.
She's dead, John.
She's dead, John. You murdered her.
Yeah, that one, and then, yeah, I think also that one they show in the trailer is pretty sweet, too, where he rolls out the snake skin.
Yeah, that's a good one.
This skin is 24 years old. There's snakes out there this big?
Yeah. See, fist pump, I'd like to pump my fist in flight's, I don't know what that means. His accent. Basically, everyone just agrees. It's just his accent.
Yeah, 100%.
So moving on into star profiles here.
Yeah.
The two of them were really gunning for it. They were doing great for themselves.
Yeah, at that moment, big time. Yeah. I mean, they're in distinctly different places because the early 90s, Jennifer Lopez, she was a dancer on In Living Color. Is that right?
Yeah.
And she was getting some work. Her music career hadn't taken off. Like, it really took off a little bit after this. What, If You Had My Love and I Gave You All My Trust?
I don't know, Ben.
Is that the song? There's that.
I actually don't know J-Lo's career that well.
So there's that song, If You Had My Love. That was like one of them, I think. That was like her first single, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was Waiting for Tonight, I think, were the two big singles from then, right?
It's so crazy. You and I were talking about this. Like, Jennifer Lopez is hotter now.
Yeah.
Like, well, hotter, and this is like very subjective, but it's like the way that she puts herself together now is there's so much more production into it. And back then she was, it's kind of refreshing to see her. It's like, I'm just a young chick wanting to be an actress, wanting to be a singer, like... It was just kind of cool.
She might be, honest to God, the most impressive example of a woman completely bucking the trend of like only being relevant in your 20s essentially as an actress.
Mm-hmm.
She's like 47, and I think she was on the cover as what, the sexiest woman alive?
I just
like,
saw
last
something
year.
Recently, and she's still incredibly gorgeous.
Yeah, she's unbelievable. I just think that's like a pretty unbelievable achievement, and with how callous Hollywood is, she's like reversed age. It almost feels like
she really has. Considering this was 20 years ago, and she's still relevant. No one else in this film is relevant.
Yeah, and John Voight kind of, because
he's John Voight
and Ray Donovan.
Yeah, and Ray Donovan, but still,
But yeah, so at that point, she had just done Selena the same year. Anything for Selena.
Anything for Selena.
You see that movie, right?
Of course.
Yeah, Selena's good. Who plays her dad? Trivia question.
I actually don't know.
I don't either. I think it's Edward James Olmos, but I might have just made that up. I think
we don't know.
Yeah. Before that was Blood and Wine, 1996.
And have you seen Jack?
Jack. Oh, Jack with Robin Williams.
Robin Williams.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a great one.
So that's the one where he ages, right?
Yeah, he's like gigantic.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, he's a kid, but his body's grown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the one.
And then you got the flip side, which is John Voight. He just did Heat in 95, followed by Mission Impossible in 96, and then Rosewood in 97. So like, I mean, this might be. You can't say pinnacle, but this might be like the third peak
Voight,
in his career.
Voight is like in a weird way. To speak to your point again about him not being relevant anymore, he's kind of like he's not as relevant now, I guess, as he was then. But he's still pretty relevant, just in the fact that he gets work. Like he was in Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah,
and I think he's in something else big that's just about to come out. He was in the Transformers movies.
I can
as
see
the
another National Treasure movie coming out and him being in that.
Does
you
he
know
play the dad? Matt? Was that a trivia question you gave me the other day that I didn't know the answer to?
Yep.
Son of a bitch.
That's the thing though, is that like that's why it's hard for me to argue my point, I guess, is because it's like he's not that relevant at all. But you put him in anything, and everyone's like, "Oh, yay!"
I wonder if people thought of him as more relevant at this point in his career. I mean, these movies, Heat's massive, and everybody loved Heat.
Yeah.
That movie is well reviewed, and he's got a good role in it.
Same with Mission Impossible.
Yeah, he's good in that. And then Rosewood in '97, I think it's like him and Ving Rhames. No, it's like an old school like lynch mob kind of drama.
Okay.
That movie's pretty well reviewed. And then on the flip side. Blood and Wine, actually, because usually what happens with this is there's one credit in there that's like not relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Blood and Wine in 96, that's Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
And it's directed by a guy whose name is not coming to mind for me, but it's the same guy that directed both Five Easy Pieces and The Postman Always Rings Twice. Like he is multiple time Oscar nominated with Jack as his main guy. So the 96, him directing Jack again in Blood and Wine, that's like a real movie. That was a big deal movie.
What was her role? Was she like a small?
I've never seen it. I was reading about it, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I don't know about that movie. But, I mean, all of these credits that we're mentioning are pretty relevant. So I think we can agree, though, for us, the sweetest John Voight role there is definitely in this movie. And it's because of the accent.
Absolutely.
So let's count down a few of our favorite other accents, both good and bad, that stand out and are extremely memorable.
Okay, well then, I just gotta say it first. It's a Scarface.
Oh, you love Scarface? Like,
yeah. I don't even know if I love it. It's just too much.
Yeah.
It's like overacting.
It's classic.
It is. And like going back and watching it, you're like, God, he's trying so hard. It's like Voight.
Did you see somebody left that comment? This is really interesting, and I can't believe that I forgot this, but I think you and I both know this. We were talking about Scarface being remade. Scarface is a remake. It's a remake of a 1920s gangster film.
Yeah, yeah. It's called something else, isn't it?
It's called Scarface.
Oh, it is.
But
okay.
It's way old, and I just forgot that it existed.
Yeah.
So it's interesting if you think about that that's the 80s version. So if they remake it today, it's almost like...
Could be sweet.
Yeah, right? Because at that point, it's just...
Who's supposed to play Scarface?
It was I said this, Diego Luna.
That's Diego. Oh, right. Should be Oscar Isaacs.
Oscar Isaacs?
Yeah, Diego Luna's so...
Mousy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really like Diego Luna, and I don't think that I like that I don't like Diego Luna. Does that make sense? Like, so many people love him, and I have no reason not to like him. I just don't. I don't know why.
I like Diego Luna.
He was good in Rogue One.
Yeah.
He's great in Milk. He's good in everything I've seen him do. I just don't like him.
Contraband. Wrapping duct tape around his head.
Okay, so, so Al Pacino, Scar... I don't know why I just did that. I hate you, Diego Luna. No, I'm joking. I love you. I think you're great. I just don't know why I am... I'm not inclined to watch your movies. Ben, accent.
I'm going to go with Swayze and Dirty Dancing.
Okay, so what is this?
So Swayze and Dirty Dancing, like, Dirty Dancing's like the breakthrough movie for Swayze. It's 87. It's like, he's already done Outsiders. He's done like a few movies in the mid-80s, but it's prior to Ghost and Point Break. So it's a pretty low-budget movie, and his dancing is like the thing that makes him good in that movie. But he's like this dance instructor that I think is supposed to be from the East Coast. When he's talking, you kind of get the sense that he's trying to do some sort of loose, like, Brooklyn. Like, I don't...
Right.
Where he's, like, talking, he's like, I don't know, baby. You know, one day you're working and they're putting $100 bills in your pocket. Like, he's, like, talking, you're like, I don't really know if that's accidental or it's intentional. But it doesn't matter because, like, you're Swayze and, like, no one cares. And this movie was still a total hit and, like, no one ever references that.
God, what movie is... There's a movie where someone's doing an... Is it, like... Quaid? Is it Quaid they talk? Or Costner?
Which one are you talking about?
Is it Costner doing a southern accent or something where he like drops in and out of it relentlessly throughout the movie?
Oh, someone was just telling us about that.
I don't remember exactly what it was, but that's great.
Speaking of Costner, actually, before we finish our list here, I'm just gonna jump to a really fun segment here. This movie was nominated for six Razzie Awards in 1998, and it's relevant for this. this is like so brilliant. All right, so Anaconda nominated for six Razzies. Worst Picture, which lost to The Postman, starring Kevin Costner. Worst Actor, John Voight, which eventually went to Kevin Costner for his role in The Postman. Worst Director, awarded to Costner for The Postman. Worst Screenplay, which lost to Kevin Costner for The Postman. Worst New Star, the animatronic Anaconda, which went to Dennis Rodman for Double Team. And Worst Screen Couple, Voight and the animatronic Anaconda, where they lost to Rodman and Jean-Claude Van Damme for Double Team.
That is brilliant.
Right?
That was one of the greatest things I think I've ever seen on the show.
I, like, needed to clip that. Like, just like Costner, like, every actor being like, we don't watch the Razzies. Costner just definitely watching the Razzies.
Damn it.
God damn it.
Well, it's funny because you said that, and I was like, where is he going with this? And I was like, oh, The Postman. And I looked up, and I was like, oh, the Post. It's like six awards.
Also The Postman.
Also The
Postman. Also Costner and The Postman.
And this, too. Kevin Costner again for The Postman.
Son of a bitch.
So my second one is going to be Hans Gruber.
Oh.
But it's not because of Gruber. It's because of Bill Clay.
Bill Clay.
Bill Clay. Like the way he says that. It's just, I love that.
Please don't kill me.
Don't kill me, please. Yeah. That's just great. I always love that when you got two fake accents.
Yeah.
And they're both brilliant.
I miss Rickman. That guy was one of the fucking best.
Incredible.
I'm going to go D'Onofrio in... Really, I wrote him down for Magnificent Seven because, like,
when he first shows up in Magnificent Seven with this voice, comes out talking like this,
you're like, what? He's just, like, just bear of a man.
Gigantic.
Running with, like, a machete. And, like, that was our fist bump moment. The first time we heard D'Onofrio talking in Magnificent Seven, like, that was the fist bump moment.
That movie was fun. The movie was a fun movie.
Yeah, I would recommend it. Yeah. I would watch it again. But then also, like, we did Men in Black a little while later.
And he plays Edgar. Edgar. Sugar. Water. Sugar. And water. Ever tried to pull the wings off a fly?
Yeah.
You want to see a fly get even?
Yeah. And then, of course, he's incredible as Kingpin.
In Daredevil.
By Vanessa.
Vanessa.
Yeah, he's just a great voice actor.
He really is. I mean, and if you go back to Salt and Sea when he's got his nose taken off, he kind of whistles when he talks like this. There's just something about him where I really admire his bold choices and just owning them.
Yeah, he'd be a cool one interview. He'd be fun to talk to.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I think for my number one or my last one, I got to do it. It's a fucking Pikey. It's Brad Pitt talking in Snatch.
Yeah.
It's a kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
I haven't seen Snatch since it came out, legitimately.
Really?
One time when it came out.
Theaters. It's a good movie.
Is it?
It's a really good movie.
It suffered from that same Almost Famous syndrome of like...
Yeah, like the Donnie Darkos and Almost Famouses and is where people just gave it too much credit.
It's our age. It's exactly the age we were when those movies came out, where they became sort of like fan favorites of people that were like younger than... People talking about movies that in our minds were like too young to be talking about movies in the way that we thought we were able to talk about movies, which means we had our heads up our asses. But
totally,
we just, you know, we got older and kept talking about movies and kept seeing them and then like worked in the business. And like looking back, you're like, now I can appreciate these movies in a way that at the time, like, I don't want every single girl in my middle school to be Penny Lane. I like don't need you all to just keep saying it's all happening.
Did you know because of how much people love Donnie Darko, I've never watched it from beginning to end?
Really?
I've seen parts of it and I know it's good.
It's overrated. It's a good movie.
But like I've never watched it from beginning to end.
Also Swayze, also a good Swayze role.
Huh?
Yeah, he plays a pedophile. and then my last one is Gary Oldman in Air Force One, the first movie we ever did on this show.
Either you refuel plane,
or
plane crash.
I can't do it right now.
Yeah,
he's hear it.
I can't even. I don't even really. I can't think of any of the lines that he says. Oh no, I can just think of Nick Cage doing Gary Oldman. Actually,
my favorite is. Your Secretary of Staff has just been executed.
Has just been executed.
Yeah, that's a great one. And there's also, did I say the Ledger Joker?
You didn't, but I think that's just like goes.
Here he is.
Yeah. That's like the best voice.
That's one of the greatest ever. So if you guys have great voices, throw them up in the live chat. Throw them at AMA Podcast.
Podcast
on Twitter, and let's get into the production development, which I want you to read this first because I just love that.
Yeah. Oh, the first part here.
Yeah.
Anaconda was not filmed in the Dominican Republic. The majority of the river scenes were filmed on the Rio Negro, the vicinity of Manaus, Brazil. The remainder were filmed at the Los Angeles Arboretum.
Yes.
Which is amazing. And then this is my favorite thing. So,
and someone talked about this too, and that's why I wanted to. What is it? Why would I want a caravan with me? That's great. Someone was earlier saying how the CG in the snake is so god awful.
Yeah.
And it's like hard to watch. And you told me a fact right before the show.
Yeah. They spent $100 million per second.
$100,000.
They spent $100,000 per second on the snake CGI. So like any of those shots where you see like the snake moving and it's like 1, 2. Cut. It's like
you are literally counting hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It's like, can we get the suitcase? Okay, burn the next suitcase.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Bring in the next bag of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at the very end, there's like a 6 or 7 second shot.
Yeah, there's going to be quite a few. The snake probably is on screen at least 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah.
Right. It's $3 million.
Yeah. I mean, at least, right? Like, the snake shows up a decent amount.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And the CG game where it's like the whole thing, that's just crazy to me.
It was an animatronic snake that at one point they like lost total control of during filming, and it like went wild.
Oh, yeah. Like we gotta make it CG. This is dangerous.
And like they kept some of the shots in the movie of the out of control snake.
Yeah.
Everybody clear!
Get out! Okay, so this movie, we see this
Boy's like, I'm not leaving. He's like, John, drop character. John, I'm not leaving.
I can take it on. John, it will kill you.
This is not part of the movie, John.
So this movie, when we get into production development, is very interesting because we've had it happen in movies before where parts of it are like not... Parts of it are people very new, and other parts of it are people where they're very seasoned. And you see, like, Gladiator is a good example, where production was kind of crazy, and they were rewriting while they're on set, but the movie's great.
It's usually, like, we'll count, like, 3 to 5 producers. There'll be, like, 1 to 2 that have one that has like generally like a bunch of really, you know, a Saving Private Ryan under their belt or a Schindler's List or some big movie, even if it's off genre, where like, oh, you worked on this thing.
And there's like at least someone in one of those categories that's like pretty relevant.
Yeah, usually the second person will have like a smaller filmography, but they will have been involved with like one really important franchise or if it's like, a franchise movies like the Bourne movies, the second one will have worked on like the last three Bourne movies only.
Right. And you'll know the director or you'll know the writer. None of that is the case in this film.
No, you can start with the director if you'd like.
Yes, I will, if I can even find it here on this paper.
His name
is Luis Losa is his name, and he's basically a newcomer. He was originally a film critic turned director and producer, and he's known for his early work on Peruvian films with Roger Corman.
Yeah.
Which is like a pretty big name. That's kind of like all he did. Yeah. Anaconda is his best known film, which was nominated for multiple Razzies, including the Worst Director, which he lost, unfortunately.
Which he lost to Kevin Costner for The Postman.
Everybody calm down. But the thing about it is that it was a massive success in the box office.
Let's throw those numbers up there. We've got the 97 box office where this movie landed.
Yeah.
So Face Off being number 11, Batman and Robin number 12. Looks like George of the Jungle. If we can blow these up just a little,
George,
I'm a little
George,
blind.
George of the Jungle.
Thank you, Marissa. I appreciate that. It's Marissa Serafini up in the booth.
Hey, Marissa. How you doing? She's good. She's quiet, but she said she's doing good.
She said she's doing well. We have George of the Jungle, something, a sequel there that I can't read.
Hercules.
Contact. But yes, this Anaconda is the
conspiracy theory.
Anaconda is the 23rd highest grossing film of 1997.
Dante's Peak, that's amazing.
Yeah, which Volcano made less money. This movie made $65 million.
Yeah, domestically.
$65 million domestically.
And we're going to get into the numbers in a minute, which is crazy because this movie like quadrupled its budget almost.
Yeah.
Like in the end, yeah. I think it maybe three times. So getting back to Lausa here, Luis, or however you say his name, the only other things he ever did was he directed The Specialist with Stallone and Stone.
Yep.
And Sniper with Tom Berenger, which is not a good movie.
But Sniper's at least like a known entertaining movie. Yeah. Both of those are like known movies.
Yeah, you know both of them. I know the cover well. Do you want to get into our writers and producers?
Oh, yeah. No problem. Hans Bauer, Jim Cash, and Jack Epps Jr. wrote the film. It's a trio. Basically, Cash and Epps are best known for having written Top Gun. That's like the thing that they are known for. Turner, Hooch, Dick Tracy, Anaconda. Like they, I would say all the people involved as a writing duo, Cash and Epps, that's like, those are real people. You know,
yeah.
The Flintstones, Viva Rock Vegas, like they did a bunch of movies that were notable, and they met as a professor. Cash met a student, and they have worked on some things that were relevant. I mean, Top Gun, just the name Top Gun is more relevant than like anything else going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then Hans Bauer, who wrote the debut script for Anaconda, his follow up Komodo about killer Komodo dragons. The cover is like identical.
I'm just terrified of reptiles.
The cover of Komodo is like identical.
It's got to be.
Really, and they didn't get any good cast in there. Similarly poor
reviews.
They
didn't get their John Voight.
No. He then wrote the story for Titan A.E., which I think probably of all the movies that he did was like the most...
When did that movie come out? Like 2004?
2000.
2000, okay.
And then everything from 04 to 07 flopped, and he stopped working in 07. So he's basically... Cash and Epps are like the guys that headline it. Then you move into the producers, and this is the part that really shocked me, because...
I just don't know any of these people.
Yeah, no one does.
Yeah.
This is like pretty shocking, I think, because as you said, this movie cost where is the budget?
$45 million.
So they got a $45 million budget to make this movie. And this is off of like probably the back of the fact that these were the guys that wrote Top Gun. I guess. Cuz if you go and look at the producers here that worked on this movie and who they were and how they would have actually put together this team, here's who you got. You got Verna Hera, Carol Little, Leonard Rabinowitz, and finally Jack Epps, who is one of the writers. Okay, the four credited producers on Anaconda. the veteran is Verna Hera, and that's only because Verna Hera has six total credits, though this was her first one. And her credits are like not movies you've ever heard of. One of them is the sequel to Anaconda. One's a documentary.
Ooh, Blood Orchid.
One's a TV movie. So this was her first movie.
Or The Hunt for the Blood Orchid is the name of it.
Yeah, yeah. You've got... The I just mentioned, Jack Epps, who had this TV movie that he wrote.
Pigs versus Freaks.
That's his other producing credit that he had done prior to this film. Carol Little and Leonard Rabinowitz have one other movie credit between the two of them. One. That's it. That's the whole... Otherwise, you've got executive producers and associate producers, but the four credited producers on this movie have, into their name, two total credits prior to this movie.
Man, what do you think Voight was thinking?
I have no idea.
We were talking about that. He was like, I've won a fucking
Oscar.
And at this point, he's not that far removed from it.
No. He's like, not. And he's still making, he just made Heat.
Yeah.
And he's doing this, like, on set, he's like looking around, everyone's younger than him. You got an up-and-coming singer, dancer,
yeah,
that's your lead, and then
J-Lo, Ice Cube.
Yeah. And they're all stoked, and you've just got to be there, like, and he's trying. He's trying real hard.
Maybe the cast, Jean Reno was the other choice for his role.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Voight's definitely a better choice, but Renault's awesome.
They both would have been good. Yeah. Neither of them are anything other than white.
They didn't even try to go Colombian or whatever they're doing. So yes, 97 fans was an amazing year with Face Off, Con Air,
oh, yeah,
Batman and Robin.
It's a big one. I think Rush Hour is 97, isn't it?
Rush Hour, yeah. I'd like to see Losa's own review of this movie as well. Yes. Jonas Tiger said that.
I don't have it listed here, but I just did a segment on my show the other day. I think the order of highest grossing movies in 97 were, what was, like, Titanic was number one.
Yeah.
Rush Hour was like number five or six. I think A Bug's Life was up there. It's like in the top few.
So Ryan Sconard.
Yeah.
I hope I'm saying that
Ryan
right.
Sconard, that's my boy.
That's your boy.
He's on my team this weekend for Grand Prix San Antonio.
Oh, this is your guy.
Yeah, Ryan, what's up, man?
What's up, man? This is awesome. It's cool that you're bringing some Magic fans yeah. over. I used to play.
Well, Ryan Sconard, his wife listens to our show. And Ryan Sconard listens to my Magic show.
You told me all about this, these people. This is amazing. I'm so glad to see you in the chat. He's been very, very active. And he had a question here. He said, would better CGI have meaningfully improved the movie? No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, the fact that they spent so much on it is, like, mind-numbing to me as it is. I don't think you could have made it any better at the time.
Somebody asked a question that if this movie was to be made today with a good director,
I think it'd be awesome.
Could you make a good movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Just bring John Voight back.
Yeah, play the same role.
Same role.
Yeah.
Same lines. Just get a different director.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to critical reception and box office. This movie was released by Sony and Columbia. It cost $45 million to make,
yeah,
which we talked about. It opened April 11th in 97. It grossed $65 million domestic, which we just looked at, and an additional $71 million worldwide for a grand total of $136 million. And it opened at number one at $16 million. Like, this movie was very successful.
Yeah. The fact that, do you find it as surprising as I do, that it took him 7 years to make a sequel? That's crazy.
We keep doing this, again, because we're playing these movie trivia games, and, like, we keep seeing, like, the gap for sequels is so... You got to do it within 2 years.
Well, this is what I always say about that. And because when using deductive reasoning with that game, when you're trying to come up with a year's release date,
right,
like, what year did this movie come out? The trick to it is always this. Like, if it came out and it was franchised in a way where, like, this will probably have a sequel if it's good, like, mm-hmm, if it's a fantasy sci-fi movie, superhero, something like that. Even if it's like a comedy where it's like, we're putting these two big people together and we know this is going to be a hit.
Right.
You can usually track it that it's 2 years. Like, sometimes three, but very often it's exactly 2 years because it's set up that way.
Yeah.
As soon as the movie makes money, they're going to come right back.
You see it, then you got to get the cast together, you got to rewrite, or you got to write the script, it takes that time in production, then you got to film.
Yeah. If you look at the producers on this movie, which we just talked about, it's pretty clear they kind of, as far as the cast goes, they caught lightning in a bottle a little bit as far as all
they
these
sure
people being
did.
Available.
Yeah, people. That's one thing that people have been saying a lot in the chat is that this cast is way too good for this movie.
Yeah, like, it's crazy that they got all of these people together in this movie, and I think to some degree, the producers being so inexperienced, they probably didn't have it organized to come up with a plot for a sequel, because obviously...
Go straight into it.
Well, everyone's dead. I mean, you would bring back three people, and the most important part of the movie's gone, so...
The snake.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think that's pretty interesting.
And then this is where it gets sad for us. And this is kind of, this is why this movie technically probably shouldn't have been done on the show. I think we did a great show for it.
Yeah.
I think we paid it respects and we talked about it intellectually, but it's always tough when it's IMDb scores 4.7 and it's three scores all top and audience critics from Rotten Tomatoes are 38, 45, and 24.
The last one's a big surprise to me, but
24?
Well, I think it's got to be because it's an old enough movie that the swing back hadn't come on this movie when these reviews were all written. So,
yeah.
Like, I think now, if this movie was to be reviewed in the same way, I'll bet you it would be something similar, like 38, 45, like 60? 70 or something.
Yeah. I could see, like, in the mid-60s.
Fans love this movie.
Yeah, they do, in theory. But, like, someone said in the chat as well that they're, like, rewatching this was painful. And I think it's the same thing that you and I experienced where it's, like, no one actually sits down and watches Anaconda from beginning to end.
I wonder if that's a specific list of its own.
That's a great idea.
Like
Men in Black,
Anaconda, you know, these movies that you watch on cable that seem brilliant, but they're not good.
And they're these mainstay cable movies that just came out in a time where it's like you've just seen them as the background so many times, actually watching them. But then the flip side of that is that, like, Roadhouse, for instance, which is a cable movie, super fun to watch.
It's way better, obviously, to watch, like, listening and paying attention with sound and all
that. It's funny.
I mean, we worked in this place for so long where we would watch cable movies with no sound that you would, like, kind of remember. And it's honestly, without the sound, glorify it, or like you mysticize it, you make it better than it really is.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you go back and watch, like, I don't know, do they? Yeah. Anaconda's not a perfect, that's not even in the movie.
We made the line what we wanted it to be. It's the same thing I did with The Running Man. It's like,
exactly.
It's more fun that way.
What was that? I feel like we had a good point we were just getting to. Maybe not. So moving on past that, I guess favorite line seems a bit redundant.
Well, we should say it, because we haven't actually quoted our favorite once this whole show.
No, not at all.
Well, the other new favorite. So, we've always said, oh, they don't do that. Like, snakes don't eat people. Oh, they don't do that.
Oh, they don't do that.
Which is not how he says it. It's actually, snakes don't eat people. Oh, they don't.
Yeah.
And then, we also quoted the line, anacondas are a part of a killing machine.
Which we thought was, like, way later on for a different thing. He actually just says it in succession.
It's the same line. And so, he actually says, it's snakes don't eat people.
Oh. Wait, what is he?
Oh, no. Anacondas are a perfect killing machine.
Yeah, and we were watching. We're like, no.
We're like, that's the whole movie right there.
That's like what we've been waiting for this whole time.
But the one other sweet line is, this river can kill you in 1,000 ways.
Yeah.
That's a really good line.
Literally anything John Voight says is brilliant.
Well, also, I love the line when Owen Wilson says, there's something down there. And he's like, no, I mean it. He's like, I really mean it, too.
Yeah, that is a very good line. I mean, that covers them for me, too. I don't really... Yeah. Oh, it was the list of movies. That's what it was. If you guys can think of any, tweet them at us, at MA Podcast. I don't know what to hashtag it, but I think that's such an interesting idea.
Movies, yeah. I think it's all the same era, because, like, those 80s movies...
Like, late 80s to mid-90s, or late 90s, I guess.
Yeah, I would say so. There's a lot of them. Like, it's funny, because a lot of the big cable movies that you see on a lot, like... The Fugitive is a good example of one of those movies that's on cable all the time. Watching The Fugitive, that movie's really good. Like, that movie has held together extremely well. Like, some of them haven't aged. It's just like some of them, there was just something about them when they came out. They just became that kind of movie. And when you go back to watch them, it's like, this is painful to watch. You know, I had a conversation last night at the Better Call Saul premiere.
Mm-hmm. How was that, by the way?
Really good.
Fun.
I love that show.
I saw that Mike and whoever crashed here.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Banks was funny, dude. It was good. And the party was fun, actually. I got to have some good... I talked to Vince Gilligan for a while last night.
Nice.
Yeah, he's fun. But I was talking to this guy who is engaged to Rae Seahorn, who plays the blonde... she plays the blonde on the show.
Okay.
And he was like, yeah, you know, you used to work in the industry. I don't anymore, but I worked for a while there with a bunch of movies like Ed Zwick and guys like that. And I was like, oh, please. I was like, please tell me you worked on The Last Samurai.
Yes.
And he's like, I did, actually. It was my first movie. I was an associate producer on that movie, and I did all the posts. And we were like, so we talked for a while about Last Samurai.
Of course.
And I don't even know why I started launching into this. There was a reason I was going to talk about The Last Samurai.
Cable movies?
Yes, because it's on cable all the time. Last Samurai is constantly on cable.
Yeah, always.
And that movie... is phenomenal.
It's even better.
You go back and watch The Last Samurai now. I actually think that The Last Samurai came out, people were like, yeah, Tom Cruise, The Last Samurai.
Yeah.
Forget this movie. 4 or 5 years later, Tom Cruise is like that in that weird, like he's kind of a joke period. So I think people were like, well, I don't want to watch that movie. If you go back and watch The Last Samurai now.
So good.
That movie's really fucking good.
So good.
It's actually one of his better performances.
Absolutely. And the guy playing Katsumoto, why can't I think of his name?
Ken Watanabe.
Ken Watanabe is incredible. He got nominated for an Oscar in that role.
Cruise should have got nominated for an Oscar.
He really should have, too, because it was. Yeah. Oh, God, that movie's so good.
That movie's great.
You guys got to go watch that movie. Yeah. And if you guys can think of any other movies that should be on that list, just tweet them at us. You don't even have to hashtag it. We'll know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Cage versus Cruise. All right, so 3 categories, man.
No, you missed it. We got a...
our question. Yeah.
So we have a question of the day, AMA question of the day, which we always ask on Twitter from you guys, do you have an AMA question of the day, something you want us to discuss on the show? And sometimes it'll inspire a whole conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Ryan, who's a longtime listener to the show, at Josh Ryan Sports on Twitter.
You guys got to step up your game. Josh asks very good questions every week.
He really does. He gives us like 5 options.
Yeah, they're amazing.
And his question this week, is there a movie made in the 90s more firmly entrenched in the 90s than this movie? And, you know, I don't know if the answer, this might be, like, it feels so distinctly 90s, even you want, like, to be a 90s movie, having a trailer like that trailer.
Yeah, trailer with that voice, having having an up and coming like rap artist or dancer or singer in a movie needs to happen.
It became a thing in the late 90s and into the early 2000s. It was like Ja Rule and DMX, like all these
50 Cent,
Ice,
Eminem,
Snoop, Dre, like
everyone.
They're all in these movies. Like Snoop had like an acting career for a few years. And this movie definitely has all those things, like Ice Cube and the way he delivers his lines. It's like
he's like the token black guy, comic relief, like that thing that they joke about. Like what is it? In Not Another Teen Movie. He's just called the token black guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think Not Another Teen Movie is a great example of like really embodying all those 90s cliches.
Yeah, Andrew and I laugh a lot about the three cornerstones of 90s action.
Yeah,
which is C4, silencers, and red dot lasers.
Yep.
And, like, if you can get all those, you know you're doing something right.
Like, Air Force One was the first show we did. It covers all three of those things in the opening.
Yeah,
I know. They go and take the Russian.
Does it do C4?
There's an explosion as they're leaving.
Yeah.
It's amazing. With the red dot, silencers, C4. So we've come up with a list of things that kind of have to be in 90s movies.
Yeah, definitely.
So we got silencers, C4s. MP5s is a good one. Like those are like the submachine guns.
That's
like a little technical. But gratuitous nudity
is
one where it's just like, why is that girl topless right now? Why is there a sex scene with these people that aren't in the movie?
Yeah. That's sweet. What else you got?
You go.
Well, I thought we had our list of the movies. You wrote down the qualities and I wrote down the movies.
Oh,
so this will flow nicely.
That's what happened. I mean, I don't really have much more than that. So we got... famous singer, silencer, C4, gratuitous nudity, red dot lasers,
token black guy.
There were some other ones we discussed.
Like very respected dramatic actor playing an outrageous role.
Yeah. Like an Oscar winner getting put in a crazy character actor role.
Yeah.
Neck snapping.
Yeah.
That's like one thing that really got. it's just an art form that they really, really used well in the 90s.
So we wrote down some movies that we felt like really like embody the 90s spirit. I'm just going to like run off the list here a little bit. And if you guys have a few others you want to throw in the chat,
please do.
This is definitely one. Like if you have one in particular that answers the question, because, you know, Josh, I think you're correct. Look at you.
Moving up in the world.
Did you see somebody asked on last week's show, one of their comments?
Why don't you bring your charger?
No. Why does Andrew's phone die every week?
Look, man, if you want to send me some money,
and I said,
I'll get a new phone.
And I was like, it's a joke that no one's in on, including us.
It's really sad.
So movies, Rush Hour. Definitely.
Yeah,
Rush
sure.
Hour, which has just like over the top racism. Like,
I mean, honestly, racism is another one we could just write. Like racism, sexism, domestic abuse.
Yeah, being like a lighthearted subject.
Yeah, these are all things that like we didn't want to put on the list because they're like not fun to talk about.
No.
But if you go back and you watch 90s movies, they happen all the time where like a husband will just randomly backhand his wife for talking back or something.
Yeah.
Or like, anyway.
Be like threatening and like, but like not in like a you're a villain way, in like a you're just like an okay kind of rough around the edges dude way.
Yeah, that might hit his wife right now, but might not.
Not cool,
please,
man.
Please don't. Yeah.
Yeah. So Rush Hour to me is a big one.
For sure.
That really feels like it. Under Siege.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Casey Under Siege Ryback. Is great. Yeah. It's got. I mean, that's got everything in it. Literally all the things we listed.
It's all of it. American Pie.
Oh yeah.
American Pie for me is in for a lot of ways. It's
like a different.
And it's got like the. The cast is like, it's like Tara Reid's on the cover of that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, that's like about it. Jason Biggs.
Stifler, Jason Biggs.
Yeah, Sean William Scott, Jason Biggs, fucking Chris Klein.
Like, Chris Klein is so good.
I love Chris Klein.
Eugene Levy. But, like, yeah, that one isn't, like, as on the nose for, like, this list, but it is, there is something about it where you're just like, that's the 90s.
Starship Troopers.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Again. Gratuitous nudity, ridiculous explosions, aliens.
Jake Busey. Yeah. Then you you got Scream, which I think like fits.
Yeah.
Scream, like it's a horror genre, but it's pretty 90s. I mean, Scream feels
incredibly 90s.
Yeah.
And the cast.
Again, yeah, the cast in a big way. For like rom-com, you've got She's All That and Can't Hardly Wait.
Oh, those are so good.
Yeah, coming of age movies.
Yep.
Yeah.
The girl that just has to take off her glasses and she's beautiful.
I had the biggest crush on Rachel Lee Cook.
Everyone did.
I loved Rachel Lee Cook.
Yeah. She was so hot.
Yeah, whatever happened to her? Is she still acting?
I don't know. I was wondering about that, too, because she wasn't bad, and she was very attractive.
What'd you say?
She's still acting.
What is she doing?
A lot of Hallmark movies lately.
Hallmark?
Hallmark. Okay. It's a good place to be.
She's got a career.
what else we got?
For a Hallmark movie.
I really would. You got What else we got? Men in Black, is that on there? Did you already say that?
I didn't. Bad Boys.
The Bad Boys, right.
Independence
Day.
That
seems more appropriate.
Yeah, there was a real thing. So I've plugged it three times, but I'm going to do it officially now. Guys, I launched a show this last week on Anchor, this new app, and it's called Fist Pump Film Club. So Anchor is this awesome app. It's like Twitter meets radio. It's like 2 to 3 minute little blurbs about one subject, and they fall off after 24 hours, just like Snapchat. Mm-hmm. So you just record directly into your phone. You're like, this is what I've got going on. So I'm kind of taking a lot of the themes of what we do here, but I'm talking about all different things in the movie world, up and coming movies, new releases, bits of news, things like that, and then kind of giving my analytical take on it, whatnot. So you can download the app, and if you have thoughts that you like, just like Twitter, tweeting at me, you can just call in. You record directly into your phone, and it posts to my account, and then I can share your call-in on my station.
Yeah.
You can share iTunes. Like, every licensed song is, like, available. I can just put it on my channel. It's an awesome app. I'm a big fan. So go find it. Download Anchor, Fist Pump Film Club. And on Fist Pump Film Club last week, I was talking about Brett Ratner. And because he made this comment that he thought Rotten Tomatoes was ruining the movie industry. And I was like,
That's maybe because you make shitty movies,
Brett. Maybe you make bad movies. So I started talking about Rush Hour, and I was like, there's just this theme in the 90s where it was like, all right, so hip-hop in the early 90s sold a lot of records. So mm-hmm. now it's like mainstream. Now we've got this like big, big trend of hip-hop. So all of a sudden, it's like big money record labels are supporting this like stereotypical like hood image of like rappers. Right. So that's why you have in the late 90s the trend we're talking about, which is the token black characters, rappers in movies, right? Mm-hmm. And then also this whole thing, and like it's embodied in Will Smith more than anyone, because
yeah, his is the sassy talk back, it's like loud
fresh
mouth.
Yeah, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air turned into a movie career, turned into a music career, and it's like something about this, like if there's a black character, they're gonna be sassy and they're gonna talk loud and they're
sassy
gonna be
black characters,
they're gonna be funny and comic relief, and they're never gonna like just like say something calmly
like a normal person
without like all this attitude. It's gotta be like make you laugh, and it's like, it's really racist.
It is.
It's because as their mainstream...
You saw what happened when Michael Bay tried to do it again later on in Transformers. People freaked out. And those were robots. Those weren't even black actors. Those were just voices.
Definitely.
And people were like, this is obscene.
Yeah. So that was definitely like a pretty interesting thing to notice. Of all these movies, I think that Will Smith is probably the actor that feels the most like what we're talking about. But if you look at Rush Hour, you've got Chris Tucker doing the same thing.
Yeah.
If you look at Bad Boys, they got Martin Lawrence doing the same thing.
Or you look at any Martin Lawrence movie, Blue Streak, Nothing to Lose, it's all the same.
Anaconda,
and they're
Ice
always
Cube.
Paired with Tim Robbins, Luke Wilson, the straight white guy, or Jackie Chan, the straight Asian guy.
Yeah, totally.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It's really silly. So,
to answer your question, which I don't even think we even really got to, I do think this movie is very, very 90s. I don't think it's tough. I mean, yeah, it is. It's completely entrenched in the 90s. This is an incredible display of what 90s movies were. I guess it's just that it's not a great movie. So it's hard to give it that credit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and also I think the one thing that pulls it away from it, the cast is the most firmly entrenched cast, but the fact that it's set on a river in a jungle, it doesn't actually have any of the 90s-isms that we're used to that really identify it as a 90s movie. There's not like a... Okay, like for instance, and She's All That, the three cents on the richer song, 3 pence on the richer, Kiss Me.
That's
some song like that that like just makes it...
You're like, we're in the 90s.
This is the fucking 90s. What'd you say, Marissa? Sixpence, none the richer.
Yeah,
that's what
would you say? 3 pence?
Three cents, I think.
3 cents, none the poorer.
I don't understand the reference.
Sixpence, none the richer is great. Yeah, that's true, because it is the cast. It's only the cast. It's like young Owen Wilson, J-Lo on her way up, Eric Stoltz. That's the only, and Ice Cube. It's the only reason you're like, this is 90s.
Yep.
And the bad CG.
So, yeah, guys, that pretty much does it. There's three action movie categories. Totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. Totally legitimate movies are like The Fugitive or like Lone Survivor. They really hold together. They're well put together. They don't make you laugh. Totally ridiculous movies are like Con Air, Face Off. Movies that are just really silly and you kind of laugh yourself off a cliff. And then there are the movies in the middle, legitimately ridiculous movies like Predator and Point Break.
And Anaconda.
Yeah. And they're like driven by like one really good performance or like some really strong plot point. But they make you laugh a lot unintentionally. Look, it's tempting to just put it in the middle
because of Voight. But there's literally nothing else, not one other thing.
And we're giving Voight so much credit,
like way more credit than we just deserves.
Yeah. So I think the answer is pretty clearly for me, totally ridiculous.
Totally ridiculous. Absolutely. I mean, there's no. If you want to argue, please call in the anchor and argue with Ben on there because I don't want to get involved in that. It just seems – it's ridiculous. There's no way to ever legitimize this movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing about it.
All right. Fair enough. Yep. That's that, guys. We have only one thing left to do on the show, and that is called
The Pitch.
So next week, next Wednesday, is a special day. It's going to be Andrew Guy's birthday.
Hey! April 5th. My mom will be here.
Yeah. 23, it's good age, man. 23, only once. Man.
Finally. Yeah. Finally getting old enough. Be able to rent a car soon.
Yeah, it's cool.
I'm getting old, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy. 30's coming up real soon. I'm turning 29.
Yeah.
It's been a great year, though. Been doing this for 2 years. Really excited. So I'm kind of torn. I'm going to put up a poll of three films. And yeah. I know what two of them are already.
Yep.
Because we've talked about them a lot. It's Sunshine.
Yep.
And 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
So two Danny Boyle films. And I just need a third one to throw up in there, and I'm not sure what it is. Do you have one that you really love that maybe is like on that same page or caliber?
It's tough because if I throw anything that's like been on the table for a long time, movies that like people really want us to do,
right?
Like The Raid Redemption, right. For instance. I have a feeling if we put The Raid Redemption on there, it just wins.
It probably does.
It maybe 28 Days Later wins, or maybe people love Sunshine more than we realize. But it's your call. Like whichever one you want to put on there.
That is an interesting. I mean, The Raid is one that I really do want to do, but then it's like if The Raid does win, I don't know. We'll figure it out. We're gonna put up a poll on at AMA Podcast on Twitter. You can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter. And yeah, I'll be 29 next time you guys see me.
Yeah, it's gonna be sweet. So guys, we're very excited for next week's show. We got a Schmodown match coming up soon.
Yes.
We'll give you guys the details on that when that gets posted. And aside from that, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Go find me on Anchor, Fist Pump Film Club. We've got big news coming up on our front, movies wise. We'll announce that sooner than later. And otherwise, guys, we'll talk to you soon. See you in a week.
Oh. Ben, where can they find you?
Oh, they can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks, Marissa.
Bye, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.